Welcome on in, everybody, to Jay Bird Watching on this Wednesday afternoon, right before the end of the baseball season, as we are heading into Game 2 of the World Series between the Houston Astros and the Atlanta Braves, with the Braves up 1-0 on the Houston Astros after last night's win. We'll dissect that in a little bit, but first, we are the official podcast of Jay's Journal. Check us out there, even though I've forgotten to post some articles recently on it. That's my bad. And Stadium Scene as well. But this all wouldn't be possible without my co-hosts, Craig Borden and Chris Key. Gentlemen, how are you doing this evening?
Lovely.
Oh, we're very well. Very well indeed.
It's actually a bright, sunny day here in Rochester for the first time.
I know. It was fucking freaking me out.
I know I'm only across the pond from you guys, but I was hoping there's some sunshine going up your way, too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was beautiful here today. It was like 16 degrees outside at one point, 16 Celsius, which I'm not sure what the conversion is to Fahrenheit. So we'll say that's okay. For this, right around there. It's probably very similar. For this time of year, that is perfectly fantastic. And you can't complain, especially after what? It was like raining for the past like 3 days. But yes.
The only fun part was we were cooking bacon for BLTs tonight, and of course, this is, you know, one of those inevitable things. Bacon grease goes everywhere, and sure enough, there was fucking smoke everywhere in the house, so we had to open up every window, and it's only that cold out.
Yeah, of course. As soon as that sun goes down, and we're in October, almost November, it gets chilly, and that means that it's the height of the World Series, which we are in right now, gentlemen. Last week, we were wrapping up our predictions for who would make it into the World Series, and I believe, Craig, I'm not sure if you remember who we all picked, but I believe we both did have the Astros and the Braves when it was all said and done. Not that that means anything, because we've kind of repicked after every series has gone by and every game has gone by and whenever we record, whether it's Wednesday, Thursday, but whatever, we got it right. It is the Astros and the Braves. Chris, you're unable to join us last week, so I want to start with you. What have been your thoughts on the playoffs so far? We only have, a max possibly of 6 games left of this baseball season before we go into a world of uncertainty with the CBA agreement. But how about the start the World Series got off to last night, especially? Charlie Morton breaking his leg and still making a couple, getting a couple outs? Wow, that was nuts.
Yeah, so let's start first and foremost. My prediction is actually the Astros and the Braves get into the World Series.
So we're thinking.
Sorry. I guess. I don't know. I didn't catch much of the game last night. I kind of just skimmed through some of the highlights. So like, the Charlie Morton thing is just, isn't that absurd? Like breaking his fibula and then getting 3 more outs, let alone striking out Jose Altuve in the process with that. That's pretty damn impressive. Tail of the tape on this one. Like it's going to come down to how well can the Atlanta Braves starting pitching carry this team? And how far can the Houston offense pick up their bad pitching? Yeah. I think that's just about the story in all this, let alone all the sideshow and antics that are going on with the rest of it. But if we keep it just to the ball team, or the, I don't even want to say ball teams, but just the on-field play, is the Atlanta pitching just good enough to stave off the Houston Astros offense? And I don't, Atlanta hasn't let us down yet. So I don't know. It's a tough call, but if Bregman and Altuve and Gurriel really get going,
ooh, it's tough to bet against them.
Atlanta could be in real tough, real fast, because that Houston offense is, I don't want to say a lot like the Blue Jays offense, but they can put up 4, 5, 6 runs in an inning really quick. And in the playoffs, that's hard to come back from. Hard to come back from.
It sure is. Craig, how about the NLCS that Eddie Rosario had? That was some like next level stuff from a guy who some thought could be a Blue Jays target last offseason before the whole George Springer signing. But man, he got traded a little bit right at the deadline, or right before the deadline, from Cleveland over to Atlanta. He rehabbed, spent a whole bunch of time in the minors, and then wow. I wouldn't say he's come out of nowhere, because Eddie Rosario has had some good years in the majors with the Twins, and he was all right with Cleveland the last little bit. But Jesus, that came out of nowhere to steer them to the World Series, didn't it?
Eddie Rosario is one of those guys that's always been an enigma to me. he's either one of the best players in baseball or he's like not a thought of thought. There's nothing in between. And it's just, he's super streaky, but to the point right now, he's riding the wave. And could the Braves hit better on any of their trades or any of their acquisitions, especially on the guys that they picked up since Acuna went down, who, ironically, I heard he was technically active for this series. Has anybody read that?
Or am I the only one?
I just, it baffles me because they're saying May for his actual return. So I guess, whatever, threatening. But to that point, I just can't believe Rosario's came on to this point. And watching him, is that's the kind of stuff that I love about baseball. Somebody always finds a way in the playoffs to turn around and shine. And 9 times out of 10 is not the guy you would think of. It just seems like there's always something. It's like Kelly Gruber all of a sudden hitting a home run in 1992 after he was in the biggest slump since the All-Star break. It's the Ed Sprague's hitting a home run. It's somebody coming out of nowhere like that to, you know, just really take a team and run with it. It's the fact that, like, when in 2015, that Ben Revere becomes, like, the best leadoff hitter in all of baseball for 2 months and stuff like that. But Eddie Rosario has found a way to help this team and has put him on his back a little bit. But if they continue to ride this offense that they've been doing, the Braves are going to be hard to stop because they do have the pitching. I don't think their bullpen is crazy good, but they just don't have any big glaring holes in that bullpen. It's about the same level of guy through the whole bullpen. And that does some good things. And I've always been the school of thought in playoff baseball, good pitching tends to be good hitting.
Yeah, no, very fair. It's going to be interesting to see how the rest of this series plays out. And honestly, I don't know about you guys, but seeing what the Braves have done, beating the crazy pitching of the Brewers, which we all thought they didn't have much of a chance to do, and then going and beating the last team of destiny that we thought was a team of destiny, the San Francisco Giants, decently handily. Now I feel like the Atlanta Braves are just destined to win the World Series and go out on top of Freddie Freeman before he maybe hits free agency after the season is done. But my goodness, it's going to be both bittersweet, but also kind of awesome that baseball will be done simply for the fact that I know we're heading into some potential CBA issues. We can touch on that later, but free agent signings, a whole bunch more activity in the offseason, but it just means we're that much closer to Blue Jays baseball, especially after missing the playoffs by one game. I cannot wait until they report spring training, and I cannot wait until opening day. Just start the season again already so that we can try again and hopefully this time succeed and get into the dance, because I thought we've said it a couple times, but had the Blue Jays gotten in, I too at least gotten to where the Boston Red Sox were. And you never know, they could have ended up beating the Houston Astros and been there right now. But that being said, what do you guys think will happen the rest of the way? Tonight we got Jose Urquidy for Houston against Fried for the Atlanta Braves. Honestly, both are good pitchers, but that to me screams Atlanta. Advantage Atlanta with Max Fried. It's been a damn good pitcher. Craig, you lead off with this one. In the end, will we actually be recording next week on Wednesday on the eve of a Game 7, or will the series be done by the time we record our next episode?
I don't think there's going to be a Game 7. I think it's 6. And at the moment, I'm seeing it swing in Atlanta's favor. I think that tonight, Max Fried runs away with it. And that's more or less because I don't trust Jose Urquidy to really, you know, rise to the occasion right now, because we already saw him screw up his one start in the playoffs. He's looking for that bounce back. To that point, I think this is going to be a close game. I do think that, but I think that Urquidy's going to find a way to cough up that extra run, or maybe had that one bad inning where the Braves are able to run away with a win. And I think because they're going to turn around and have guys like Max Fried come back in a game early, I would expect now with the Charlie Morton thing,
probably
that they're going to have the pitching advantage, I think. And I just think that that's how it's going to play out. Like I said, the pitching usually tends to beat good hitting this time of year. And I think that's what's going to end up happening, unless the Astros' key to this whole thing is they have to somehow get into that bullpen and tire the hell out of everybody. Unless their offense runs away with something, which I don't see happening, I think that's the Astros' ticket to fame here. And then the Braves need to do what they've been doing and just find a way to edge out teams, get enough pitching, and get those couple of extra runs on the board, and hope Jose Eddie Rosario just runs away with it again, or Freddie Freeman goes for a 3-home run game. Who knows, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
But I was very concerned.
Okay. Chris, where are you going?
I think that's hard to argue with at this point, to be honest. And, like, going on with Max Fried, I want to say, why can't I pull up his... Why can't I pull up his postseason? I want to say he's pitching to like a 1.7 ERA or something silly.
It's been damn
for bad. Postseason starts. Like it's ridiculous. So it's so hard to bet against Atlanta right now. But like, would you feel better about Houston if Greinke was old Greinke right now? Like, aside, like they could have Verlander out there, and I guess you could say that like Atlanta could obviously have Acuna, but Houston just they don't feel as scary, and if they're not hitting, like there's nothing really special to keep them in games. Like there's no dominant pitcher. There isn't vintage Verlander out there, or there isn't a Scherzer even, or anybody like that where you're like, oh yeah, Houston has this game. I don't feel like that with any of these.
Yeah.
The most confident pitcher I probably so do I see them going back to Atlanta up to nothing? Yeah.
Yeah. That's where I'm going to.
It's pretty deceiving and rough for them to come back from, I think.
Yeah. See, if they win tonight and go up to going back to Atlanta, it's not going to Houston in my mind. I think maybe Houston speaks at one, but if you go up 2-0 and you have a chance to win the World Series Atlanta at that new park with Freddie Freeman in front of the home fans, that just screams, hey, you got to get it done. If they are up maybe 3-1 and they fail to, that would be game 5 to clinch it, and it goes back to Houston, that would be the only way I think we get a game 7. You go 3-2, Houston wins game 6, mm-hmm. and then they sell. If the Braves win tonight, I don't think it comes back. I think the season ends on Sunday night. If the Braves lose tonight, however, then all bets are on to see what happens. Yeah. Then for sure you're going back to Houston for game 6. Just a matter of where you're at in the series. So in the end, I'm probably going to go Atlanta myself as well. And because I'm kind of cheering for one of my friends who works for their AAA team, because it sounds like he could get himself a World Series ring, which would be cool, because he would be one of the only people in the world, possibly, with both a Grey Cup championship ring from the Edmonton then-named Eskimos, now named the Edmonton Elks, and the Atlanta Braves. So that'd be a pretty damn cool combination. I don't think anybody else can have that combo. So go Braves just for that. But as a couple people have noted,
slight, distance between those two.
But I can totally understand people's I don't think the right word is frustration, but just kind of distaste for the Braves with the whole tomahawk chop thing. And there's a rumor that Donald Trump is going to be at game 4 on Saturday.
Going to game 4.
Yeah, yep. So the Braves don't care what anybody thinks politically. They do completely opposite of what a lot of normal thinking people would want.
Georgia.
They just maybe want to root
against Georgia. That's
Astros now. Jeez.
Oh man.
Let's get Gibby his ring and make the world right.
Yeah, exactly. He would get a ring from being an advisor. AA would get his ring. Lewis would get his ring.
Did you ever hear like one of the first interviews when he got that job? No, you didn't hear that? I don't know if he was on with Bob McCowan or it was somebody like that. And they were like, so, like, what do you actually do as an advisor? He's like, I don't know. They call me and they ask me some things sometimes. And I just sit back and I kick it at home.
Oh, my God. That sounds like such a John Gibbons beer drinking job.
it was basically, I don't know what I'm doing. They just call me and they ask my opinion on things sometimes.
His next step is joining this podcast to have a few more beers and make.
That would be a dream to get John Gibbons on. That would be amazing.
I'm going to find a way to look him up just to be that.
Hey, just do it.
You can.
Would you rather do some special advising over here?
He's on one of those like memos or whatever they are. Yes. You can send him a message there.
Billy Chili on Twitter. That was that was hilarious, that whole video for his graduation. He's what a gem. And I think we should start the official campaign for John Gibbons for New York Mets manager, because that just seems like such a lot.
I don't want him to go to that dumpster fire though.
I know it's tough, but it just seems like such a logical fit with the fact that he used to play for them and whatnot. But I'm with you on the fact that it'd be a little bit of career suicide.
Did you hear that Ozzie Guillen is one of the names being floated around for the San Diego Padres?
What?
I love that.
Oh my God. Like, that's taking a whole bunch of fireworks, lighting the box, man. Shaking it, and throwing it in a corner. That's all that is.
Tony La Russa to the big leagues to manage the year this year, and next year we're going to bring back Ozzie Guillen. My goodness, who's going to come next? Is Bobby Cox coming up? Come on. Somebody coming?
Give Tony La Russa a job this offseason. You're worried about Ozzie Guillen? Come on.
Could you imagine that with Machado and Tatis? And
that's some fireworks right there. Some fireworks in that dugout.
That gives you a full crack or like fireworks and slam to Slam Diego, not just Slam Diego.
As completely off topic, who, if there's a manager out there right now to lead a team like the San Diego Padres after winning the last two off seasons, I would almost say, and having an absolute disastrous season, for them at least, what kind of manager do you see them picking up, and who's out there that would fit the bill?
I have always such a tough time recollecting on managers who are actually out there and available, because there's so many, but I mean, maybe Ozzie Guillen wouldn't be so bad at the end of the day.
I like the Ozzie Guillen idea because they completely underperformed, and that's what the White Sox were doing before they hired him. So light a fire under their ass, literally, right? Ozzie Guillen is savage. He won't leave anybody safe.
I'm just trying to think of other, like maybe Ron Washington. I mean, I know that's been a link.
Yeah, I could see a Ron Washington.
Yeah,
it's gonna be a veteran guy, I think. With all
it'll be somebody like that. I've heard Buck Showalter's name float around. I don't think he fits that team at all. Although there's a connection with Machado, I don't see that happening at all.
If that was gonna happen, something like that, you know, wouldn't you think they would be still like grabbing, like, okay, go for Sandy Alomar Jr. or something like that, who's been managing a lot in the minor leagues, and would the
There's got to be something there, though, because he's always been floated around for what, the past 15 years, there's got to be something that raises red flags with him, though, because he's been up for consideration for the last 15 years, and nobody's ever made him the manager of a team. So there's got to be something that pops up in interviews, or something pops up somewhere that he just doesn't fit with teams. And it's not just the Blue Jays his name has come up with. His name has come up at everyone all over the place.
Yeah.
Constantly. So,
he likes to bunt.
Could I be this guy and be really controversial with where I know the topic's going later? Jesse Barfield.
Hey, we can transition over to that now if you want. That is one of the rare topics these days that somewhat relates to the Toronto Blue Jays that we can dive into a little bit. The one good thing about the World Series possibly ending as soon as next week or even this weekend is the fact that we can slowly move on to our off-season stuff and all that stuff we've been saving for a little while. And then that just opens up a whole vault of content. But we're almost there. If there is still a World Series game next week, we'll hold off until the season's done. But we will go into that in due time. So this story kind of broke. When was it? Last week, Thursday or Friday? Chrissy sent a message about it to Craig and myself. All took a look, read it again this morning. And the gist of the story, from what I understand, unless I'm completely missing something from my skimming through of the article and reading his tweet that was since deleted, but still up on sportsnet.ca, is that in his role as, what is it? And that's not a, is it an advisor, or?
He's like an alumni advisor, or like
something like
alumni that. Coordinator. I think he just like, he's in charge of the alumni events, or is like an advisor to those events, or
basically a big fan at the end of the day, trying to keep them relevant from somebody who's a good player.
To that fact, he's a member of the Blue Jays, not officially organization, but he's like the family member, right?
Right.
So what more or less, and I think that's basically how he kind of summed it up.
He's like a first cousin. That's a very good way to describe it. He's not part of the immediate family, but he's right there in that next tier. But apparently, over the course of this past season, he broke protocol, whatever that means. I'm guessing what it means is that he helped three different Blue Jays with their hitting. And it doesn't seem like there's any sort of like trouble that's brewing here at all. I also don't think there's anything to be necessarily mad about with this. because in his post, he said he was just trying to help some guys who got off to some slow starts, one of those being Teoscar Hernandez, another being Lourdes Gurriel Jr. But at the end of the day, Chris, because you brought this to our attention, what do you think it all means? I mean, he tried to help them by giving them hitting tips. It doesn't seem like any feathers were ruffled between him and Guillermo Martinez, the actual hitting coach. I know that Dante Bichette has spent some time in the dugout helping with hitting. Dave Hudgens, with his weird not bench coach title anymore and whatever coach he is these days, he's helped with hitting. But, like, what spurred this on? This seems very random.
If you kind of read some of Jesse Barfield's tweets and kind of go through some of his videos, he's a confident dude, real confident dude. And it kind of translates a little bit and what some people might call a little egomaniac maybe, and a little bit maybe full of himself. But on the other hand, a lot of people say he's a great guy, gives all the time in the world to fans and to people, and will talk and whatnot. To me, it does scream that somebody got a little bit butthurt that Barfield put his 2 cents in to try and help the younger boys, and they didn't like him stepping on their toes.
Yeah.
To me, at the end of the day, did you get 3 guys that are nominated for Silver Sluggers out of the deal?
Yes.
Who cares at that point? Like, take whatever help you can get. If you can get guys hitting like Teoscar or Gurriel, who started really, really slow and then turned it on when it mattered and made himself relevant again, whether that's going to be in trade talks or as a big piece of this team going forward, which is where I would be leaning to, you take that help and you don't make a big deal of it. And like, the team obviously didn't make a big deal of it. But in most cases with things like this, they're going to keep that hush hush and they're not going to make that public, that Barfield did that on his own and made some tweets kind of stating a reconciliation with Shapiro and with Atkins afterwards, whatever that was or whatever it means. I don't know. And I don't think it really matters. Mm-hmm. But yeah, to me, it screams that somebody was a little bit butthurt that somebody else was going to get some credit and they wanted to nip that before it got out there.
Yeah. Craig, do you have a conspiracy theory or do you agree with Mr. Key?
I don't have a conspiracy theory, but I'm a person I've actually chatted on Twitter with Jesse Barfield, and funny enough about hitting. So this is a guy that goes out online and he's enamored with baseball, just like all of us are. And obviously he was a high-end professional at this game when he was playing. You know, he was the first Blue Jays home run champion for a season, if I recall correctly. But to that point, he's going online. He just freaking throws tweets at freaking random hitters in Major League Baseball and goes, hey, you know, you're stepping in the bucket. Hey, you know, start your swing just a little bit earlier. Yeah, those things. Mm-hmm. It's just a guy that's very, you know, just happy to spread the wealth of knowledge, obviously, that he's accumulated in his lifetime about hitting. And to that point, if he saw something, and to the point of, I believe the exact quote from him was somewhere in the ballpark, if you saw your child drowning, and you knew you could help, you're going to help. You're not going to sit there. And honestly, I love the fact that he still treats this organization, because he was a Yankees great too. Mm-hmm. And the fact that he considers his first home his true family in the midst of this whole thing, to just, you know, hey, you know, to dive in and help out with this. I just think that speaks to the content of his character, and that he is I just looked it up. He's the alumni ambassador for the Toronto Blue Jays. So he's that link between Blue Jays alumni and the actual club. To that point, like I said, if you have any advice that's ever, you know, sometimes some people are just too close to the project and it has nothing to do with what they know, don't know, anything like that.
Ding, ding, ding.
What a second set of eyes. I'm an engineer in my daytime life outside of, you know, not knowing anything about actual baseball. But there's so many things. It's done in a team effort. You know, no matter what project you're working on, if you're trying to live in a vacuum and do everything exactly the same all day, every day, maybe that's not right for someone. And maybe it really isn't going to fix the problem. And with these, you know, quote unquote, three players that he helped that we have, you know, since heard of that are pretty much the best parts of our lineup, he found those couple of things that they were missing. And, you know, maybe it was just a few text messages or phone calls or whatever it was, like he said. And next thing you know,
a couple of videos he sent them. He posted one or two of the videos. They were actually really informative if you saw them.
Like I said, the guy is a freaking like girth of knowledge.
Yeah, he's a hitting guru. Like if there were kids out there, young athletes, like go look through his Twitter feed because there's a bunch of other videos of this guy showing stuff. Like go and watch it.
He has a lot of videos when Fernando Tatis was playing in the minor leagues because I think that's actually around where his home is in the off season and stuff like that. I don't recall, but there's a lot of videos from minor league baseball players and especially his, I think it's his son. That's been, you know, coming along pretty damn well in the minor leagues, too, just saying. Mm-hmm. That he's enamored with the game, and he doesn't, you know, and, like, he's happy to share his knowledge. And for the person that's willing to take that knowledge, clearly it can help.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't see anything wrong. I don't see anything wrong with what he did at the end of the day. I don't even know why it came up. I think I agree with Chris in the fact that they probably wanted to squash anything if somebody was going to speak up publicly. I don't know. It kind of screams to me that Dave Hudgens got a little upset that I don't know why. It just seems to have Dave Hudgens written all over it.
To the point, I'm looking at the Sportsnet article that was just released 2 days ago. So it's a more recent than the original one. He still has his job. So apparently it isn't too bad.
Yeah.
I'm sure.
Maybe just say it's going to go through the proper channel next time.
Yeah, fair.
And I think it's kind of neat. Barfield even showed that, like, how he got linked with Lourdes Gurriel was at, like, Winterfest or Jays Fest or something, and they were serving popcorn together. Lourdes started asking him questions about hitting and whatever. So, like, I don't think this is an isolated incident with Barfield where Gurriel reached out to him at some point in the last couple of years, or maybe Barfield has been saying to him over the last couple of years, hey, try this, try this, try that. And then this year, something really clicked with whatever he said. But did Barfield have to come out and tweet it all out and say? Probably not.
Instructed.
He's a proud dude. So, like, I'd be proud if I had three guys like that where I helped them figure out what was going on with them. And now they're all Silver Slugger finalists, and two of them are probably going to win. And, I don't know. I'd be proud of that too.
Yeah, he's obviously, like you said, I agree with you everything you just said. But to that next point, though, he didn't come out and was a jackass about it.
No.
Sorry. You know, that was like one of the classiest, well-written letters I've ever seen in my life. And for obviously a situation that was not the best to be in, but whoever maybe did get upset about that whole thing, if you were reading that after the fact and all that kind of stuff, which I'm assuming he also got a formal apology for, that says it all right there. It's the content of his character, and the fact that he even talks randomly online with goofballs like me, I thought that was amazing. You know, he's just that kind of a nice guy.
Do you think he's up for a batting or a hitting coach job?
That's what I'm thinking. Like, is there some sort of hidden motive here for him to release, especially the names of the three players? Like, is he trying to get in somewhere else? Is he trying to get in as the
hitting coach? I think he can get a job, though, without even trying that.
Probably.
I mean, you know what I mean?
Yeah. I'd be curious. There's got to be some sort of underlying motive, because you don't just release that unless you're instructed to, or if there was some sort of, like, power struggle in the organization. Like, I guess worst case, maybe they're trying to get ahead of the fact that maybe Lourdes and Teoscar, who was the third player?
Guerrero.
Vlad, okay. So your three superstars, minus Bo, be like, hey, we like listening to this guy over our own hitting coach. That's the only thing I can see why he'd be instructed to say it. If not, there's probably some other motive.
Well, so they hired Bo Bichette's dad and Dante.
Yeah, what's the big deal? Just do it now with Jesse Barfield.
They did it way back long ago when Colby Rasmus.
It's
freaking giving the stuff, and they were not getting butthurt about that, and they knew that whole problem. So
yeah, I don't see an issue.
I'm not gonna lie, out of all these situations, I'm sorry to say, I like our coaches. There's not a problem there. But if you have a chance to listen to Dante Bichette, Jesse Barfield,
I probably will.
Vlad Senior, any of these guys.
You have a wealth of knowledge there. Don't be pushing away what you have.
And there's no way that Vlad Senior doesn't tell his son what to do from time to time, especially if he struggles. Like, what's the issue with Bo going to Dante or Vlad going to his dad and saying, "Hey, I'm struggling. I'm trying everything the hitting coach is trying to get me to do, and it still doesn't seem to be resonating with me. Do you see anything in my swing that's gone wrong?" And they probably sit down and talk about it. There's no difference. They're going to Jesse Barfield versus that.
Yeah, to that point, all Vlad was saying, you're swinging at too many strikes that are in the strike zone. You got to swing at some outside.
wait until they bounce one to you.
Yes, and then swing.
Real hard.
Vlad Senior probably just goes, listen to Jesse Barfield.
Yeah, just don't listen to me. Don't listen to me. But yeah, non-story. I mean, at the end of the day, that was the biggest piece of Blue Jays related news over the last 7 days since our last recording. And that just shows you what kind of content we're looking for right here until we get to the offseason. Is dissecting that something that's not a problem.
For that point, though, it actually made for a really fun job show title.
Oh, absolutely. It's great. I mean, we made a whole lot of over nothing, really. And I think that, as I was reading the article, too, I'm just thinking, why the hell is this, like, trying to be blown out of proportion for no reason? Like, there doesn't seem to be anybody that's butthurt about this right now that we know of. There doesn't seem to be any consequences. It's just an apology. Move on. You had three incredible hitters who turned their season around after these conversations. So let's move on and try to become a 94 win team next year instead of 89, because that should get us in the playoffs next year. 94 wins.
Maybe the fucking Giants next year.
Yeah, exactly. The other piece of kind of Blue Jays news that broke over the last week or so was that Chairman Edward Rogers, you might recognize the last name. Yep, they're the family that owns the Blue Jays and the whole big media outlet that is Rogers. Cable, TVs, everything. Basically, everything in Canada is either governed by Rogers or Bell when it comes to your entertainment. And yes, the Rogers family is going through some sort of internal struggle, an internal fight to get Edward Rogers off of the board, all that different kind of stuff, and have him not have such an important position. But what came to light was the fact that this wasn't Blue Jays related, but there was a whole thing during the offseason that Edward Rogers, Masai Ujiri, who is just an incredible executive for the Toronto Raptors, there was a little bit of, I wouldn't say animosity, but Edward Rogers trying to step in and maybe feeling a little bit threatened by somebody who's better than him, somebody who won and helped architect an NBA champion that came through. And he seemed to get a little offended by the way Masai Ujiri was acting. That's besides the point. There is a little bit of a Blue Jays tie-in with this. Is at the end of 2015, after it was solidified that Mark Shapiro was going to come on and join the Blue Jays in his current capacity, there was a last-ditch effort to try to retain Alex Anthopoulos. And towards the very end, Alex Anthopoulos actually met with Edward Rogers, and apparently it was the first ever time that Anthopoulos had really even heard of the guy. It seemed like Anthopoulos was out the door regardless, but at the end of the day, there's some power struggle. There's some weird vibes going on in ownership of this, and a couple people have concern about this moving forward. I forget what beat writer it was that said it. I'll have to go dig it up, but somebody said it's possible that teams in free agency or agents could use this Blue Jays power struggle amongst ownership to be like, don't sign with them. There's some ownership instability there. Craig, I'm not sure if you've read the story about what happened between Edward Rogers and Masai Ujiri, but also kind of the little bit of a Blue Jays tie into it. But at the end of the day, is it something that you think could hurt them in free agency if an agent said, well, don't go to them. Like, look at that power struggle they're having. There's a little bit of instability there. I don't know if that whole story.
To that point, I'm just going to say Shapiro seemed pretty damn sure that his budget's already established.
Yeah, exactly.
So,
he did say that they're having meetings over the next month to determine what it actually is, though. So.
Correct, but to the fact that everything up to this point is an increase, and to that point right now, I think this team, even if they keep a payroll that they've been, targeting for the last couple of years here, where they expected to be, they're on track with their plan. The plan hasn't changed, and they're most of the way there. So why would you stop spending money on it now? You know, they want to get they have a chance to get tons of asses in those seats in the Rogers Center, tons of eyeballs on all Rogers media and everything all over the freaking country, and apparently down here in Rochester, New York, for at least the, you know, goofball like me and our other co-host Adam Corsair. Yep, shout out, buddy. So,
Yeah, exactly.
You guys.
Wait a second.
But they're not going to stop spending money on this team right now, so I don't. It'd be a stupid ass business decision, no matter who's sitting in that chair, to stop spending money on this team right now when you already have two great players that you're spending a lot of money on. One of them might be a little on the decline in Ryu, but we're going to still get good baseball, I think, with him. And then you just threw a brick of money, and you're only in the first spring, first contract season of George Springer fully. There's no way help. They're going to spend money. And I do still think that they're going to go out there and look for trade guys. But in the midst of those trades, I think they're going to be willing to take on salary would be the big catch.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't see this being a Blue Jay issue at the moment. I would think if they were trying to recruit somebody to take over for Shapiro or somebody like that, that would be where the big problem would be. Mm-hmm. But if anything, this is hurting some of the other things, I think, around the team with maybe renovation level,
mm-hmm.
a new ballpark, those kind of things more than the product on the field for this upcoming season.
Chris?
I don't see it being such a huge deal for free agency. Like, we were able to get George Springer and Marcus Semien up here without a home.
Yeah.
And without knowing what was going on with the border. Where I see it being an issue now is, and we're still not 100% sure who's actually signing the checks there, right? Like, do we know if it's this Natale guy or is it Ed Rogers who's signing the checks? We don't know exactly, I don't think. I would imagine it's probably Ed Rogers is the one signing the checks at the very end of the day. To me, if you can't get this guy on board for giving $15 million a year or whatever they're paying to Masai Ujiri, and he's raised the franchise value of the Toronto Raptors $500 million or whatever it is, how are we supposed to convince this guy that we need to pay Vladimir Guerrero Jr. $300 million? And how are we supposed to convince him that Bo Bichette is going to give you a return on $250 to $300 million as well? That's what, along with Craig said, with renovations to the park or a new stadium, I see that being problematic. They also have the mayor of Toronto on the payroll as well, so that probably doesn't hurt in that respect. As the mediator or whatever the hell he is, making $100,000 a year from Rogers to get involved with the family issues, standing in the middle of it because whatever. I do see it being problematic though with trying to retain these guys for such high numbers.
Right.
I'm not at this point reading this stuff. I'm not confident that they will shell out that kind of money. That could change very quickly, obviously. But it's hard to see it right now, and it's hard to believe it until they do it.
Yeah, that's fair. That's absolutely fair. Yeah, it's not really a Blue Jays story. It's more only focused around what happened with the Raptors and Masai Ujiri and trying to bring him back. But, Chris, I think your point about if you don't value and want to pay Masai Ujiri what he's probably worth, like, the Raptors are a top 10 team in valuation in the NBA. They were never even close to that radar before Masai Ujiri came here. Like, I remember ESPN posted it the night that the NBA season started about the 10 most valuable teams, and all the comments, a ton of comments were like, holy crap, I didn't even realize the Raptors were that popular and that much value. So if they're struggling to pay him, or maybe there's just some sort of weird dislike for Masai Ujiri, maybe it's a separate thing, but I could see it.
There were some undertones implied about that.
Yeah.
There were definitely some. Yeah.
Yeah. So
to that point, that this shows how valuable the Canadian market really is.
That's another thing too.
Did you catch part of it at the bottom though, Brendan?
I don't think so.
That with regards to Ed Rogers' conditions on signing Majiri, that he wanted to restructure a lot of what was happening in MLSE, and one of the things that he wanted restructured was adding the Toronto Blue Jays to that package.
Oh shit, actually I did see that. I forgot about that.
Mm-hmm.
So they want to.
They want to. That means there's a whole hell of a lot more money to play with.
Yeah, hell yeah.
It's all in the bucket instead of it being, oh, you just get this little piece. Yeah.
Now, Rogers owns 37.5%. So does Bell in MLSE. And then Larry Tannenbaum owns, what's the rest of the math, 22% or whatever it is. Could that play to the Toronto Blue Jays benefit?
Maybe.
I see how the Leafs are run, and that doesn't inspire me too much.
Yeah.
And
come on, kinda, Josh Donaldson's suiting up. Didn't you see?
Yeah. I don't know. I think that has more to do with Shanahan and what stems from the top than anything. But with Shapiro, I feel completely confident in whatever he's going to do anyway. But if that were to happen, I think the sky's the limit for this team, because there's so many other things that company can do, and the buying power and the pull that they have in Canada is unbelievable.
Yeah, very true. Very, very true. Yeah, it'll be interesting to monitor, see what happens with the whole power struggle that is at Rogers right now with Mr. Edward and being little bit of a goofball this past summer by trying to not retain Masai Ujiri and whatnot. It could affect the Blue Jays. It very well could. So it's something to monitor as the offseason goes along. Was there anything else that you guys wanted to add? I know we threw around a bunch of stuff in the Twitter messages as we were planning for this show. There was talks about, do we talk about the CBA this episode? Do we go into hypothetical trades? I think maybe that's saved for when we start our true off-season stuff. But was there anything else that you guys have seen on social media from fans, from beat writers, from anything that you can bring up before we end with a staple Craig Borden game?
How about Gabby Mourinho?
Off to an incredible start.
Like hitting almost 509 games and an absolute boom boom shot straightaway center that would have hit windows.
When are we calling his arrival at the big leagues in 2022?
Well, because you're gonna trade one of the catchers. You bring him up on opening day. Yeah, I
don't see anything outside the Alejandro Kirk idea.
Yeah, I was listening to, and say what you want about this, but Blair and Barker. but basically what Barker was saying was, what's the difference from what you did to Alejandro Kirk or even
very true
Alek Manoah this year?
Yeah.
You threw him into the fire. They made it out.
Succeeded.
And thrive. Well, Kirk less so this year than Manoah into the deep end, and they swam. And that, what does it matter if he can catch? He can apparently really catch. Sounds better than both options that were already, or all three options that were running out there right now. That's for sure. Dangle Kirk out there, Mourinho, and see what happens. You still have Danny Jansen, and there's always some veteran catcher left over at the end of spring training that you can go and pick up if Mourinho completely falls on his face. Which he's not going to make the opening day roster. I'm not saying that he'll be left. Depending on how this new CBA goes, he'll be left until May 1st or whatever the hell the date is. But why not? If he gives you an opportunity to win more ball games and add another bat, why not?
Absolutely.
Bring him up. Let the kids rake.
Look at the Blue Jays' weaknesses from a year ago.
Catcher.
And third base. You look at those two positions, and if you can gain one fucking win.
Yeah.
Just saying. You can do it. And to that point, I would be very curious if somebody had the stat in front of what the Blue Jays collective average was for players that started at the position at catcher. Ooh, I'm not talking about the games where Alejandro Kirk DH'd and raked. I'm talking about the general 1.94, batting average that we had from the year before. You know, that kind of shit is the difference in the world right now. And if Gabby Romano can do anything to help that out, you have to pull the damn trigger. And right now I'm in the school of thought of what you both said. I'm not bringing him up to the big league club like I did with Kirk to start this season. At least Kirk had that little cup of coffee the year before. but there is a chance there. Let's say he starts in Buffalo this year, just absolutely destroys AAA pitching.
Up by
aren't you at least intrigued and tantalized with that idea that he might be able to run into something
totally
off of the bench to do a 60-40 split with Jansen or Kirk?
100%.
And then maybe steal the job.
Seems easy. Seems too easy.
I don't think Kirk's on this team next year.
So that's what's going to be my next question. Unfortunately,
I don't agree with you, but I don't like it.
So I think we're all in agreement.
I'm perfectly fine with it if Mourinho's going to be the guy.
Yeah.
You don't need four catchers on this team.
Yeah, and unfortunately,
and apparently Mourinho's
hot spot, he doesn't have any trade value. Reese McGuire doesn't have any trade value of anything other than a backup catcher.
Yeah.
So Kirk's your guy that could be a real catcher.
Mourinho played some infield this year before he got hurt. Did he not?
Was it first base or third base? I'm pretty sure it was third base.
I thought it was third base.
I was under the impression it was third base too.
Yeah, yeah. So
I'm gonna call that think we it was third base. Agree, and we win.
I want to say, he played some third catch. Oh, he played one game at third base. One game.
Yeah.
Apparently.
Well, that's to that point. At least he might be taking some big reps. But I think clearly the thing you're gaining is offense, just like how we were talking the last 2 years with Alejandro Kirk batting.
Mm-hmm.
So. You started going down this path, Chris, and I credit you for this, but the fact that he has 9 hits in 5 games right now, and 4 of those are extra bases, he's got 3 doubles and a home run.
Yeah, and it was a monster home run.
He's good.
It was a destroy. Like, there's lucky there's still a cover on that damn baseball. So, but to that point, I know the people on this show know this, but for the average fan, the Arizona Fall League is a very competitive baseball league. The best prospects in all baseball, and some guys that are just left over that really want to play really good baseball still, and can't play in the major league. Correct. And then we saw what he did, you know, and then he ended up not only did that, but didn't he play in the Dominican League right after the fall?
Yeah.
So Vlad basically had all year long baseball last year, and that's why we got to see the best of that, I believe, because he worked all these little kinks out because he had a really rough Arizona Fall League.
Yeah. I'll bet you Mourinho goes to Dominican or something like that as well this year.
Wouldn't be shocked. Wouldn't be
shocked. He only played 30 games this year.
Yeah.
37 games. So
yeah.
He'll be
on the team that he's talking with right now, too. There's two guys on that team that have 14 RBIs, 13 RBIs. And one of them is Juan Yepes, that is, I can't recall what team he plays on. And then Jeter Downs, who is one of the top 100 prospects in baseball right now. So he's in that same conversation on that team he's playing on in the Arizona Fall League, that is one of the best hitters on that team right now.
Absolutely. That will be something to monitor as the offseason goes along and what happens. But I think we're in agreement, and there will probably be, because Craig, you know this from the last couple of years, there's usually one big hypothetical trade episode per offseason. Like a couple of years ago, it was Nolan Arenado. I forget who it was, like even 2 or 3 offseasons ago. But I'm sure that when that episode comes, Alejandro Kirk's name will be thrown into there as a potential package. And I don't think people will be upset if it brings back that level of a player.
Those were always our most, before our obviously joining with Fanside and Jay's Journal, those were always our most popular episodes. So
everybody loves rumors. Sometimes offseason is better than in-season content, because people get into their routine, they want to watch the games, they're like, hey, just win, doesn't matter what everybody else has to say, it's the rumors that get people going, that's for sure.
Yeah, and then you can join in the conversation with us, get on this Twitter board and just freaking argue.
Come on,
us to talk trade with and be like, yo, what the hell, why aren't you talking about this, we're here.
So Craig, as we normally do during the regular season, and Chris, you know this because every pick of yours was Robbie Ray for the regular season, we do picks to click. Craig has kind of thought of something else to replace that for the off season. So Craig, why don't you run with it to end the show?
Yeah, we're gonna think of something stupid basically to do as a goof around thing at the end of every show, where we can just, you know, have some fun and create some Twitter content. Content at the end of the year and carry over and goof around and have some fun with the offseason baseball. And we've done already almost like a Darwin level awards thing for some of the stupid things that award random people on our bench basically. Last week we had Chris Henderson of Jay's Journal and country music fame on the show, and we, because we all three of us had previously written together on Jay's Journal, We played a game on trying to name the most popular articles the three of us have had over the years while we were writing, and the results were rather ridiculous and stupid. So we're just going to keep this fun going. And the game I thought of this week, and obviously anybody on Twitter that has any good fun ideas, we're going to goof around with this too. Put in your two cents if you have any fun ideas of games we could play with you and the fans and on the show with our guests. Obviously add your two cents and we'll play. But this week, gentlemen, we are going to play your, first off, the best piece of Blue Jays memorabilia you have, and then the most obscure and random piece of Blue Jays memorabilia that you might have in your personal collection. And I'm not talking about that Minoru and Kawasaki jersey behind you, Mr. Key. I'm just kidding.
There's no Kawasaki.
I don't have, you don't have like a bobblehead of him yelling, I'm a Japanese.
No, I do not. No, no.
I'm glad they didn't make one either.
No, Mark DeRosa owns that. Just saying.
They would have, people would have been lined up to Scotiabank Arena for that.
Wild for you that.
Camping out the night before.
Easily.
With you have your raise the bar with Delabar shirt. Just questioning.
Oh, I wasn't that one. Remember when they were trying to send Michael Saunders to the All-Star game? And they had like the vote Saunders, so it was like a target. I had one of those
or whatever, right?
But I wouldn't call that my most obscure or my best. I gotta think of the best. I already know my most obscure, but I'll save that for later.
Let's start with favorite while you all obviously completely keep your
I'm like trying to look around to
most
see
random shit.
It's not memorabilia, but can I just put a different twist on your question?
Oh, right ahead. This is for fun.
The memory of being at the bat flip game for me, because I've said it multiple times on this show. I'm kind of scared that that's already when I was only 23 at the time. It was probably the best sporting event I will ever end up going to. If there's another sporting event that somehow tops the emotions and just all the stakes of the bat flip, like if the bat flip game essentially rehappened but in like game 7 of the World Series, or to go to the World Series, then maybe the stakes are a little higher and that tops it. But I think the memory of that for now, knowing that that's probably the best one, that's what I
love. Is that a kid's wish?
It's like a little, I don't know if you can see it, but it's like a,
is it like twas
I
the
can't
night
even do it, but no, it's like a flip.
Oh, you flip.
Oh, awesome. I don't know if you could see it at all, but
that is pretty sweet. We could see it.
you flip
through it, and it actually shows them doing it. That's pretty cool. So is that the best?
I don't know. No, I don't know if that's any of them. It was just I was looking at it while you were saying the bat flip game. No, I would really have to look around.
So you didn't keep a beer can or something from that night, Brendan?
What's that?
You didn't keep a bat flip beer can from that night that didn't get thrown on the field, or
I would have lost it. That
didn't steal a lapel pin from Harold Reynolds or something like.
Yeah, no, I would have lost the can that night too with how drunk I was after that.
You should have just went. Well, this welt came.
Yeah.
From tripping and falling down the ramp, leaving the ballpark. All right. Do you want me to give you my most obscure? And this will maybe
go for most obscure. Or name if you know both. Go for both of them.
Yeah. So anyway, my most obscure. I'm going to go with this one because this was actually, sadly, a Toronto Blue Jays giveaway in the Angry Bird era. I have a Ted Lilly Pez dispenser.
Oh, that's pretty cool. Actually.
Yes.
That's really cool.
I have four of them.
What?
This guy from Gibby knocking him out.
Oddly, the Pez dispenser body is in the Black Jays jersey.
Wow.
So,
what year would have that have been? Because what, Lilly was on the team from 2003 or 2002 to 2006?
Yeah, something like that. It was obviously a couple of years after we got him, but really all the stuff we have back then, all the failures we had on those teams, it would have been like the only person who could have gave a weirder award to was like by giving like out freaking Miguel Bautista freaking anything.
Hey, or having, that Lilly was an all-star one year, man.
Or Josh Towers like bookends or something.
Yeah.
I'm leaving. Yeah. But Brendan, I'm surprised at all this stuff I know you are that you went to during the days. You didn't pull out the Gustavo Chassin cologne.
Oh, I wish I had that. That was the night of my elementary school graduation, so I was a little tied up.
I just remember you mentioned that at one point, brought that up as a thing one time. So
that's why I wasn't there. I tried to get
up. Blue Jays have had some weird giveaways.
Just trying to think of some of them, because either I go too late to get there, especially when I was living right beside the dome, I wouldn't line up, I'd just roll in at like 1 o'clock and be there at 1:02. That's good. I know my most obscure, both a hat and a baseball somewhere in this house, with the Garfus on it. Remember Dirk Hayhurst and his
Dirk
Garfus?
Dirk Hayhurst, yeah.
Yes. So, and I loved the Garfus. It was my fantasy sports team's name for years, and I thought it was so cool. So I got a couple Garfuses in the house.
There you go. So, Chris, you got anything yet? Or you only got cool stuff is all you're telling us.
No, yeah. I really don't. Like, when Wes and I started this podcast, I guess this is kind of Blue Jays related, I guess. But, like, when we first started this podcast, I just started, like, messaging anybody and everybody that I possibly could think of to try and come on the show just for fun and being cocky and stupid and just thinking that this is how you do things. So, like, we had, like, Wilner and Shulman and Ben Wagner and, like, Jamie Campbell, Joe Siddle. Like, we had all these guys on, like, lined up in a week. It was ridiculous how we were able to get all these people, like, right when COVID started. So it was super cool. So then I started, like, trying to – I went and started finding baseballs with these guys, all their signatures and whatever. So I've been trying to get all of their signatures on baseballs and whatever. So I have, like, Shulman and – another one is Bill Humber as well. If you guys know who he is, he's like Canada's top baseball historian.
Oh, really?
He's been on our show a couple of times. Yeah, he's been on the show with Wes a couple of times. Wes was doing the Canadian baseball history series that he ran and talked about, like, the Asahi team and like the Chatham Colored All-Stars and a couple other kind of famous teams and stuff. So that in leagues. So I've been kind of doing that, but, like, probably, like, true Blue Jays stuff. I remember when I was really little, it was shortly after the Blue Jays won the World Series, and Brendan, you would know Conestoga Mall,
yep.
But this is, like, it was nothing like what it was. Such a dive.
Yeah.
It was such a crappy nice mall at one point. It's nice now, but it was, absolute dumpster fire for many, many years. And I remember my mom was there and my great grandparents were there, and we went early because there was a Pat Borders, like, autograph session, and he was there. So we got there super early and we sat down for breakfast in the food court, and I was, like, sitting there 3 years old or whatever with my little Blue Jays hat on and shirt, and this guy came over. He's like, oh, hey, are you a fan of the Blue Jays or whatever? Can I sit down and have breakfast with you? And lo and behold, it was Pat Borders.
Well, that's so cool.
So I have, like, a thing autographed by Pat Borders and whatever. So I don't remember a whole lot of it. Like, I was, like, 3 years old, but that was, like, my one cool moment, I guess.
That is pretty cool.
That's pretty similar to how
other than going to the Greg's on charity beer pong tournament and watching just the sleaziest show you have ever seen. When you okay, I can't go on any further.
Greg's on talk and go down a slippery slope.
Yeah, I saw things. Let's just say that
I've seen him out at Toronto bars before a couple times, and there's some interesting stories you can tell about Greg's on and what he does when he gets a little too drunk.
Wes has a. If you guys can get Wes on the show at some time, ask him about Joe Biagini.
Okay.
Definitely well, this will. Guy's got a Biagini story.
Yeah. Ask him about Biagini and Grichuk.
Okay. we'll save that for Wes's story time when he comes on the show.
That one's a good one.
All right. So back to where we were goofing around. What is your most prized Blue Jays possession? Or, you know, what you think is your coolest one?
The memory of winning the World Series.
Oh, come on. I'm talking physical shit, man. This is your chance to gloat your collection.
Once again, not exactly Blue Jays related, but we played the last, they used to play a slow pitch tournament in the dome. And there'd be three games going on at once. And we, like, our team won the last one. I have the banner from, like, winning.
That's pretty cool.
So
that's pretty cool.
Yeah, so that would be, yeah.
Was that when they did games, like, at all times of night? Like, you could play games?
Oh, yeah, it was ridiculous. Like, we played the last day, like, our first schedule, I could tell you almost exactly. Friday night, we played at 6:30, and then we played at, like, 10 in the morning on Saturday, and then, like, 2 in the morning.
Yeah,
and then basically we played from like 7:30 or something, like Sunday morning, until like 8:30 at night, like straight through. It was ridiculous.
I heard that there were some upset times.
It's stupid. It was stupid. The 24-hour tournaments over 3 days are ridiculous. Like, so people are sleeping in the bleachers, and it's an eerie place when it's completely empty.
Yeah.
It's really creepy place. Like, everything echo. You can't even fart in the place because everybody's gonna hear you.
Like, is it got like those weird like vortexes of sound? Like, if you're completely across the ballpark from somebody, they hear it.
Yeah,
like they're standing next to you.
Yeah, it's super awkward and eerie. And like, Kevin Pillar showed up. We were out for dinner at that point, but yeah, Kevin Pillar showed up that year in the middle of the tournament, which was kind of cool.
That is cool. That's really cool. Craig, what about you? What's your most prized possession?
Mine comes with a stupid story. And I have, so my dad, my uncles, basically every male in my family went to the 1991 All-Star game at the Sky Dome. And mind you, I'm old enough to be a big fan at that point. You know, I was born in 84. And I'm sitting there going, well, where the fuck's my ticket? You know, so they're like, oh, you're staying home with mom. You know, and I'm like, what the fuck? And so all my, you know, relatives and everything and my dad go to the ball game, have a great time. He comes home with a 1991 All-Star game ball and he goes, here, I got you a gift. Hands me that, right? And I'm like, oh, that's it? Like, I get a $3 ball? Okay. So many, many, many years later, Joe Carter happened to be here in Rochester for Toronto Blue Jays night. They had a bunch of Toronto Blue Jays alumni here, Joe Carter being the headline for a Rochester Red Wings game against the Buffalo Bisons. And in the midst of that, I'm like, I'm going to get Joe Carter's autograph on this ball, you know, just to, you know, rub on the fact that I met Joe Carter and had a conversation and to my dad. Right. So I take him the ball and I show it to him and he goes, wow, I haven't even had anybody ever want me to sign one of these. Well, I'm like, that's because I got to tell you a story. And I told Joe Carter the story that my dad, you know, went to the ball game everybody without me, brought me home the ball. And I'm like, now I'm going to go give him this baseball. And he didn't want it because he just, I bought that for you years ago, you know, kind of thing. So the fact that Joe Carter got a chuckle out of that story, I thought was hilarious.
That is so sweet.
That's up on my mantle, and I got a picture of him with it, you know, with me and him holding the ball. That was what I was planning on keeping, giving the ball to my dad. And so it was just fun to be having that little story around with it. And the fact that I got a picture of Joe Carter laughing hysterically and then with me.
There's always a bunch of good baseball stories that people can rehash. That's the one good thing about that sport that always has a lot of breaks and time in between pitches and in between actions, is there's always good times for stories, especially with how long the season is and how accessible the players can be. It is all around a lot of good baseball stories that people can tell from their years of being fans. Was there anything else that you guys wanted to touch on before we do two claps and a Ric Flair?
If you are ever looking for good Toronto Blue Jays memorabilia, you need to go to spring training.
Yeah.
Got more stuff from Dunedin than I have ever in anything else. And some really random cool stuff. And with the players being, even in the new ballpark, even in the new ballpark that they renovated and everything, the players are boom right there. It's going to be interesting to see when the COVID stuff loosens up a little bit on how things can get back to normal in Dunedin for that, because that is still one of my favorite things to do as a Toronto Blue Jays fan, period.
Well, it's Florida, so.
Yeah, I don't think there's normal there ever again.
We're open for business. Come on down.
I think it was the governor of Florida said to all the boats there, you know, off of California, that with all the things that, you know, basically we use in North America that come from China. No, just come on over here. We'll take care of that. It's what? You know, the retiree's going to get on their scooters and unload fucking pallets from ships? Or Don't worry about it. Not to mention there's this giant landmass in between that side of the United States and the other. And there's like only really two ways you can get there. By the Panama Canal. And see the Panama pull back Canal. All the way around. Don't worry about it.
Chris, anything you want to add before we wrap it up?
Nothing that's going to lead down another hour and a half rabbit hole.
We'll save that for next time so there's more content. All right, guys.
Just an hour.
Yes, perfect, perfect. We've milked this somewhat content, Cal, enough for this evening. Thank you, everybody, for listening. As always, make sure you check us out on Jay's Journal when I remember to post the articles. When we're starting to get big, leave us reviews, whatnot, and check out Stadium Scene as well. Always got to shout them out. Always retweeting our stuff. Great podcast aggregator of content there. But, gentlemen, let's end the show how we always do with two claps and a Ric Flair. Ready? One, two, three. Go!
Woo!
Let's go, Blue Jays!
Do it.